It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me? Or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Google's control over what people hear, watch, read, and say is unprecedented. Almost 90% of internet searches in the United States use Google. Google's domination of the search engine market is so complete that to Google is now a commonplace verb. With that market power, Google can and often does control our discourse. And sometimes tech companies talk about their products and the effects of those products as though they're forces outside of big tech's control. As we've heard time and time again, big tech's favorite defense is, it wasn't me, the algorithm did it. But Google's search engine isn't some supernatural force. It's a computer program written and maintained by people. So every time we search on Google, we see only the web pages that Google decides we should see, in the order that Google decides we should see them. Type a few letters into the search bar, and Google will tell you what you should be looking for.
That was the voice of Senator Ted Cruz, and that was a hearing that he participated in and put together on Capitol Hill just about a month ago. The hearing was sort of an exploration of what's happening with Twitter, Facebook, and then Google. And this particular hearing was just about Google. Now, most of you, 90% of us, actually use Google as our search engine. And so you sort of have an idea of why it's a problem if they're trying to manage your information. But you might not have thought about the repercussions of social media censoring conservatives and its effect on us as a nation. And so I want you to listen to this next exchange. This is an exchange between Senator Cruz and Dr. Robert Epstein, who is a professor researcher who's been actually doing a lot of information gathering about how Google is operating. Let's listen.
I'd like to take a moment to make clear several things. First of all, as I understand your background, you're not a Republican, and nor are you a conservative. Is that accurate?
That would be an understatement.
And indeed, you're the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today.
Correct.
So you're a respected academic. You testified before this committee that Google's manipulation of votes gave at least 2.6 million additional votes to Hillary Clinton in the year 2016. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I want to make sure I understand. You personally supported and voted for Hillary Clinton.
I was a very strong public supporter of Hillary Clinton, yes.
So you're not dismayed that people voted for her, but your testimony is that Google is, through bias in search results, manipulating voters in a way they're not aware of.
On a massive scale. And what I'm saying is that I believe in democracy, I believe in the free and fair election, more than I have any kind of allegiance to a candidate or a party.
And looking forward, if I understood your testimony correctly, you said in subsequent elections, Google and Facebook and Twitter and big tech manipulation could manipulate as many as 15 million votes in a subsequent election?
In 2020, if all these companies are supporting the same candidate, there are 15 million votes on the line that can be shifted without people's knowledge and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace.
All right, if I have not made it clear why we should be concerned about social media, that in itself is reason. I've asked Dan Gaynor to join us today. Dan has been with Media Research Center, which has been the champion at following media bias for decades now, founded by Brent Bozell. But of course, everything has changed now. It's not just network television and cable news. Now we're looking at a fight for really the truth among social media giants, really, which make network news look like an insect when it comes to their power. Dan is the vice president of business and culture for Media Research Center. Also, he's in charge of MRC's Tech Watch, which is you can find it at their Newsbusters webpage. And so Dan joins us this morning. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on, because this is so essential. I mean, Brent refers to this as an existential threat to the conservative movement. I mean, that means this is it. This is survival for the conservative movement. And if we don't act, if we don't work together, then I believe Ben Franklin said once, we either hang together or we shall all hang separately.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. I could riff on that, but I better keep going. Dan, you know, I've known you for a long time, and you've been on the front lines of the culture wars with me, actually, doing separate but different, you know, doing the same thing. But I'm guessing that your life really has changed. This is a whole new arena of battle. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know, like, from your perspective, when did it first, when did it first happen that we realized that social media outlets were not the friends of conservatives and people who love this country?
Well, I mean, I would say that was when it really came to the fore was 2017. And there was a reason what happened in November of 2016. You know, flashback for a second to 2008. Social media was instrumental in Barack Obama becoming president of the United States. 2012, it was wildly instrumental. And in fact, Facebook people later admitted that they had, you know, given help to Obama's team that they had not given others. And you know, Obama won handily again. But in 2016, we had a different kind of candidate. We had a candidate who was himself a celebrity, one of the most famous people in the world, and he himself was a big user of social media. So he had a very advanced social media operation, and he had his own Twitter account, which at the time had tens of millions, now I think it's up to like 50 million or something like that, followers on Twitter. So he could, and I'm going to throw a tech term that, you know, from the early days of the internet, he could intermediate the media. And by that, it's a very simple thing. He didn't need them as gatekeepers. He could simply put something out there, and the press had to deal with it because he had enough followers that it would get attention. So after Trump won in 2016, the left and many in the social media world had been so intent on changing things that, you know, this is the realm that they're in. They want to prevent 2016 happening again.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that in greater depth in a second. Now, Ted Cruz actually did a great job of kind of giving us a good introduction to this discussion. He's talking particularly about Google and its power over us, that 90% of the world really uses Google. That's amazing. And I'm curious, Dan, if you were to describe, and I'm not talking just about Google now, if you're to describe where we are now in terms of our relationship with social media and its impact, can you put this in perspective for us, and even more broadly than Google?
Okay, sure. I won't just do Google, but we've never in the history of human rights had companies this powerful. I'm a history buff, and you know, when you think of powerful companies in history, you naturally think of the British East India Company. It had access to a navy and land troops. It held sway over India, but it didn't have the power that these companies have. Because these companies, Facebook, for instance, reaches 2.7 billion people. That is more people than are in India and China combined. that, you know, it is the most powerful nation on earth by population. Google, 92.3% of the search results in the world are Google, so much so that it's termed. YouTube, the number one video site that's so dominant that the New York Times claims it impacts elections in foreign countries. And then Twitter, which I where I spend a lot of my free time, Twitter is the dominant news maker of the day, to the point where the reason why the whole nation is talking about Chris Cuomo today is because Chris Cuomo's stupidity, it happened to him where he yelled and screamed and cursed at somebody, it went viral on Twitter. So all of those, that's the lay of the land. You know, as this fight has escalated, I would say this fight has escalated in the last, you know, since the election, the last 2.5 years, things have gotten worse. There's been more and more calls on the left to silence the right entirely, to shut down. They will say, well, we want to shut down, and they'll pick a term, fascism or white supremacy or whatever. And then conveniently, their description of the term will always include Trump and his supporters. Because in their minds, anybody who supports Trump falls into every negative category they can come up with, and and here's the term they use, deplatform them. They want to remove them from social media platforms. So you can't, like what happened with Alex Jones, you can't be on a social media platform, you're banned, your content is banned. Well, I know Alex Jones is banned. He's a conspiracy theorist, he's not conservative. But the reason why they came gunning for him, ultimately, is because he was pro-Trump. And so if you flash back to 2016, there were two truly pivotal, in human history, pivotal elections, the Trump election and Brexit in Britain. And what has happened since then is the major media, the left, and the social media companies have worked hard to both frustrate those votes and prevent them from ever happening again. And so they've gone about, they platformed Britain First in Britain. It had 2 million Facebook fans. It went after Alex Jones and others on Facebook. They targeted a whole bunch of conservatives on Twitter, and they're moving to systemically target conservative voices. And that's the problem.
Yeah, a great, great overview, Dan. What I'd like to do is kind of walk each of these down and just kind of think about the specific, I'll just call it sins, of these particular social platforms. It seems to me the Facebook was the first one that we really started seeing them censor and limit the reach of conservatives. I could say that, you know, for my own Facebook page, for my radio show. Tell to us about the abuses of Facebook, if you could.
Look, in general, all of these companies, they're Silicon Valley-based, they hire liberals, and they hire international employees who are not necessarily favorable to American concepts of speech, to American values, etc. So Facebook is run by liberals, particularly Sheryl Sandberg at the chief operating officer level. It is staffed by liberals. And so liberals do what liberals always do. They created rules. They've got thousands of words about how content is supposed to be done on their platform. And they keep updating it. And every time they update it, they make it harder on conservatives.
Dan, I'm going to interrupt you. Hold that thought. I'll let you finish that sentence, I promise. On the other side of the break, my guest is Dan Gaynor.
That sounds great.
Media Research Center is really the leader in this. They have just done yeoman's work, and I've been able to partner with them to some extent. Although this is such a big issue, honestly, I'm overwhelmed. I'd be lying if I weren't. I use social media all the time, but this is a huge problem, and I'm so grateful that MRC has taken this on, and Dan Gaynor is their point person on this. So stay with us, if you will. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, you described the Go Vote reminder, and you said it wasn't a public service announcement, but rather manipulation. Can you explain how? I'm not sure everyone followed the details of that.
Well, sure. If on Election Day in 2016, if Mark Zuckerberg, for example, had chosen to send out a Go Vote reminder, say, just to Democrats, and no one would have known if he had done this, that would have given that day an additional at least 450,000 votes to Democrats. And we know this without doubt because of Facebook's own published data, because they did an experiment that they didn't tell anyone about during the 2010 election. They published it in 2012. It had 60 million Facebook users involved. They sent out a Go Vote reminder, and they got something like 360,000 more people to get off their sofas and go vote who otherwise would have stayed home. The point is, I don't think that Mr. Zuckerberg sent out that reminder in 2016. I think he was overconfident. I think Google was overconfident. All these companies were. I don't think he sent that out without monitoring systems in place. We'll never know what these companies are doing. But the point is, in 2018, I'm sure they were more aggressive. We have lots of data to support that. And in 2020, you can bet that all of these companies are going to go all out. And the methods that they're using are invisible. They're subliminal. They're more powerful than most any effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences. And I've been in the behavioral sciences for almost 40 years.
Psychologist Dr. Robert Epstein, who's been studying Google and their methods and Facebook, and was testifying before a Senate committee. Ted Cruz was questioning him. And we're talking about the effects of social media and the dangers that they present to us. And it is accelerating more and more each and every day. My guest is Dan Gaynor from Media Research Center. Dan is in charge of this whole business of exploring and tracking what social media is doing. He is the VP of Business and Culture for Media Research Center. All right, so when we last spoke, Dan, a few minutes ago, I asked you about Facebook, and we were kind of into it. What is the most abusive thing, or what other things should we know about how Facebook is operating in a way that hurts the country and hurts us that are conservatives?
Well, what they do, they have set up rules and that about content and what's allowed on their platform. But one of the first times we encountered this was when they started talking about gender, and Facebook went from talking about two genders to they progressively increased the number of genders. I'm not even sure what the final total is now. I think last I heard was 50 or 60.
Joe Biden knows.
Like,
ask Joe Biden. Just kidding.
But they also have a fill-in-the-blank gender option. So basically, the number is infinite. If you're not comfortable with the gender they choose, I could pick, something entirely made up, and that's my gender. And so they've allowed that to be the rule. Well, so then you look at the content, and the content rules don't allow you to criticize that. They specifically have a morality clause in there that says you can't criticize things based on morality. Well, and then you see that they restrict guns, and then you see that they come down on pro-life groups, and you just work your way through. At one point, the Declaration of Independence ran afoul of their automated programming because of how it refers to Native Americans in the Declaration of Independence. It's not sufficiently woke. And so you go through, and these are all the problems, because and illegal immigration, that's one of the protected groups. It's not fully protected, so you're allowed to criticize illegal immigration, but you're not allowed to criticize illegal immigrants. And so what you've got is people on Facebook trying to guess how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and if you guess the wrong number, you end up suspended, you have your post taken down. Then when you appeal it, you go back to the liberals who created the rules in the first place, and only a small number of people are sufficiently savvy to know that they can appeal outside and go to the press, contact groups like ourselves, and we can help a select number of them. But you see people like Activist Mommy getting their accounts shut down, and even look at the people. When recently Facebook went after what they called dangerous people, you can criticize what they post or some of the things they've said, but
I don't think anyone on planet Earth considers Laura Loomer and Paul Watson to be dangerous people. They may say things that you don't like, but are they dangerous? No. So what they've done is classified a whole new area of where you say things that they don't like, and that's danger.
You know, and it seems to me, I was just going to say, Dan, it seems to me that of all these social media outlets, this is the one that the common man or the average ordinary American has really seen firsthand, has probably had friends or themselves get banned from Facebook or posts taken down. And I think they're probably already noticing that this is the first thing I know, Dan, that you know, of course, that so many of us had our posts limited and are still, and we don't even know it. It's do they call it shadow banning on Facebook?
What they do is indeed shadow banning. And in fact, Mark Zuckerberg said in the fall, he publicly admitted that whatever the rules that they are that they set, you know, whatever the boundaries of speech that they set, they said some people will run up to the very edge because, you know, those are rules. They're like, okay, you set the speed limit to 55 miles an hour, so people will go 55. So what they did, they set up rules so that if you go close to the line, they restrict that speech too, even though you don't know. And, I mean, that's just lunacy. I mean, that's
all right. Yeah, it is lunacy, and this is where we are, and that's how people are communicating, and it's just all right, but let's move to Twitter. This is something that's not as commonly used. It's certainly used by pundits, people like you and me, to get our news. I think in some ways Twitter might be the worst, but I could be wrong. I'm curious to know how you would describe what they're doing in this arena of shutting out free speech.
Well, you're right. You're 100% right that Twitter is the worst. But so here's something, because the left will periodically say, oh, well, you know, look at all these conservatives on fill-in-the-blank social media outlet. You know, see, it's not really censored. What they don't want to acknowledge is conservatives took to social media like a duck takes to water. That's because the only other ponds certain conservatives had available to them were their own private ponds. You know, here's a chance for us to reach out to ordinary people, reach out to famous people, reach out to mass markets. And it wasn't controlled by the major media outlets that have been silencing us for decades. So that's conservatives do a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort at these social media sites. So you look at something like Twitter. Twitter, left to its own resources, if conservatives work together, conservatives can dominate Twitter, as we're seeing in the last 24 hours, where it's 24 hours of Chris Cuomo being an idiot. And something on those rare times where libertarians and social cons and Trump supporters and never Trumpers, where they all agree, they rule. I genuinely do, because Twitter hasn't gotten rid of enough of us yet that we can still do that. And I would add another group to that, free thinkers, what are sometimes referred to as the intellectual dark web. The Joe Rogans, the Tim Pools, the Dave Rubens, people who are not conservative, but who embrace free thought enough that the left now hates them. So Twitter, much like Facebook, has a set of rules, but its rule set is much smaller. But what it did for a long time, it worked with the Southern Poverty Law Center to help come up with a list of people it doesn't like. It shadow banned members of Congress. It has banned abortion ads. It targeted a member of Congress for her campaign ad because it was pro-life. It has prevented live action from buying any ads at all. All sorts of conservative pundits have been targeted on Twitter and gotten bad treatment. Dana Loesch, who I think is possibly one of the bravest people I've ever met, Dana on Twitter receives more abuse than small countries. I mean, the round-the-clock threats, abuse, name-calling, the words that they use, I couldn't say on this station or even hint on this station that they're commonly used on Twitter. Like I said, threats of violence, and to get that stuff removed is almost impossible. But when liberals are targeted, you end up with Twitter where they actually canceled just a funny term for people because they said, oh, it was being used to embarrass journalists. what happened was the New York Times and several other outlets had written articles about what it's like to be poor in America, in rural poverty. And they wrote articles like, well, why don't you, you know, learn new skills, get out of wherever you are and learn new skills and, you know, learn stuff like technology and all. So when a bunch of journalists lost their jobs because of cutbacks in that field, somebody on, I think it was Reddit or 4chan, one of the websites that are more free speech oriented, came up with an expression that they turned into a hashtag that people could replicate. You could find it on Twitter. That was learn to code. And it got so bad, so many people used it, and they would send notes to journalists basically saying, oh, you know, give up your bogus job, learn to code. And they were banned on Twitter for doing it. So you can say things fouler than I would ever say in my life on Twitter to a woman, and it's okay, but you can't say learn to code to a journalist. And that just shows the disconnect.
And the other thing, you know, that's made the headlines that people will be familiar with that happened just recently in the last week was these protesters out in front of Mitch McConnell's home wanting him to die, wanting to stab him in the heart, wanting him to, glad he was injured, just describing death. And so Mitch McConnell's staff posted the video of them out there threatening him. Twitter took it down, the video of those vile people standing in front of his home saying those vile things. And I mean multiple things. I just gave you one taste of it. Meanwhile, Twitter leaves up this hashtag Massacre Mitch. I think that's one of the most graphic, worst examples I've heard of the kinds of things they've been doing, Dan.
Well, bear in mind something. What the social media companies want is regulation. Now, I know that sounds counterintuitive, but they, you know, for a long time they didn't want regulation. And then they came around to it's going to happen. So now they want to do what econ and poli sci people would recognize this term, regulatory capture. Now, regulatory capture means they want regulations set up so that their competitors can't compete with them, and their lobbyists help set up the rules. So they know the rules, we'll set up rules that are really expensive for a new company to do, but are easy for us as an existing company to do, and nobody will be able to challenge us. And then people get off our back about whatever content, and meanwhile life goes on. And so they're just trying to maximize their own business, and they don't really care about whether these are free speech platforms. And Twitter was founded as supposedly a free speech platform, and that has all gone away because, you know, there was definitely a degree of naivete about creating a free speech platform. Because if you've got a free speech platform, what you get is people posting everything. They'll post insults, they'll post porn, they'll post dirty words, they'll post graphic photos of violence, you'll get anything. And that's always the problem. So companies setting up rules that, you know, that normal people want without restricting content, when in fact they all want to restrict content. They all want the content they don't like off the platform.
Well, and we know that because, like in the case of Google, for sure, we've had three whistleblowers so far that I know of. Two of them have been fired. And the third has been anonymous, and they have told us about the culture at Google and how, you know, they really do want, for instance, President Trump to be defeated in 2020. They are rabid leftists, with few exceptions. And so, speaking of Google, and we've talked about them a little bit, but I just want to say, Dan, as you know, there were meetings with Google execs, two of them that I was present for, with a group of us, including Brent Brazel, and they swore to us that there was no bias. There is just no bias. These algorithms are impersonal, and there's no way that we would be, you know, showing any kind of bias. Just a word from you about that.
Well, you know who says that algorithms are biased? Liberals. If you talk to liberals, there's an article just this week talking about how one of the Google algorithms was racist. now. They looked and they said this word analysis algorithm restricted speech from African Americans, I think 1.5 times as much as it did for Caucasian Americans. So there's a ton. All you got to do is search its algorithm's bias, and you'll find a ton written on it talking about how it's unfair to minority populations. Well, conservatives are a minority population. Christians in America have become, you know, a minority population. And the way they're treated on these outlets is exactly the same. So on one hand, the major media admit that these organizations are biased and that these algorithms are created by humans, designed by humans to do things, and that they can have intended or unintended consequences to restrict certain speech. And then on the other hand, they say, oh, but it doesn't affect conservatives. It's ridiculous.
So we see. They are lying to us. We know what the truth is because the proof is in the pudding, as we might say in old days. Dan Gaynor is my guest from Media Research Center. When we come back, we're going to talk about an example of real lying by Google. What can we do? What should be done? And what alternatives are for us? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It is your testimony that you never use content moderation to advance an ideological agenda. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator. And it's, you know, it is both contrary to our mission, contrary to our business interests, and it would be incompatible with the systems that we build to work political bias in there, which I think is why we've had third-party studies, including the ones that I referenced, that demonstrate that we do not have political bias.
And inconsistent with your basic values, I imagine you would say.
Inconsistent with our values.
Except for when you do it in China, right?
You're happy
to censor for the repressive authoritarian Chinese regime, like for instance with Google.cn, happy to censor away any mention of Tiananmen Square, happy to help the Chinese government maintain control of all information within the country, happy to help them control the information flow to their own citizens. You're happy to do all of that. Would you call that censorship with an ideological agenda?
Senator, we don't offer almost any of our products in China. We don't offer Google Search.
Wait. Are you saying that Google CN did not include censorship tools based on what the Chinese regime asked for? Is that your testimony?
We have not.
Google CN did not include censorship material?
Senator, I don't know what you're...
You're not familiar with Google CN?
I'm referencing the fact that we exited China in 2010.
Okay, so that was Senator Josh Hawley quizzing Google executive Karan Bhatia. And you heard Karan say, oh, no, we exited China in 2010, which is true. But in the interim, they've been developing this new, they've been helping China develop this new repressive approach to social media, which the Chinese are reeling under right now. Look at the headlines in Hong Kong. What do you think the people of Hong Kong are so afraid of? And Google has been helping that. Also, Peter Thiel, who's a billionaire investor, a supporter of Donald Trump, recently accused Google of working with the Chinese military. And you might remember that Google refused to work with the Pentagon, but they are now, according to Peter Thiel, working with the Chinese military. My guest today is Dan Gaynor from Media Research Center. A word about China and Google from you, Dan, before we talk about some other things.
Well, Thiel, I guess you said Thiel accused them of being treasonous. Because China is not like the United States. If you work with a so-called private company in China, you're sharing data with everybody. You're sharing information with the government because they will share it with them. So that's a distinction without a difference. And so the fact that China has so duped willingly, you know, the companies like Google is part of the problem. That, you know, you look, China has locked up more than 1 million Muslims in its country. China is going to suppress, we all know this, the free speechers and freedom people in Hong Kong. And yet the media treat that totally different than they treat other things. And that's part of the problem.
Yes, for sure. And the other thing is that, of course, in China, the people are being so suppressed, it's just almost breathtaking. And the fact that Google is even, you know, helping to them to develop something. I remember, you know, Dan, in the first meeting that we had with Google and Google execs, we met at Heritage Foundation, ironically, because then they later, you know, wouldn't let the new president, K. Cole James, be on their advisory board. The Google employees were so upset about that, they shut her out. But before that happened, we were talking about this. And they made the point that, you know, you have to understand we're in X amount of countries, what, 100 and something countries, and they all have different cultures and different rules, and it's very hard. And I simply said to them, why can you not export the First Amendment? You are, after all, an American-based country. Why can't you let the First Amendment be your rule of thumb? That if it's not something that's going to cause death or, you know, like yelling fire in a theater, allow it. Just allow it. And of course, they claim sympathy, but we can see that in the final analysis, they are happy to cooperate with lack of free speech and really cooperate with the Europeans who are pushing for control of free speech. It's just shocking, really. It is. So with that, go ahead.
I guess we've reached the point where there's basically, in theory, three different views of free speech online. There's a Chinese completely totalitarian view of free speech, that the government controls everything and you do what they say if you want to do business with them. And a lot of people do because it's so big and they want to make money. Then there's the European model where they want to restrict increasingly more and more speech. They want to restrict bad speech, speech they don't trust, they don't believe in, they don't agree with. And that since, particularly since the attack in New Zealand, that level of speech has increased a lot, what they don't agree with. And then in theory, there's the American model. But we've seen the American model is, there is no American model. Even among conservatives, many believe, oh, well, these are private companies. They can restrict speech all they want. But what has happened is these companies are now the equivalent of the new public square. And the reason why people get upset is if you silence somebody, you have to live online now. And my 89-year-old mother said something to me not too long ago. She said, if I weren't around, she said, I wouldn't know how to access my bank. I wouldn't know how to access retirement or, you know, all these things that now mandate that you do them online. She said, I couldn't survive. And that is life in the West now because of the internet and social media and companies being online and such. So if you can't be free online, you can't be free in the West. And that's exactly what the left and the social media companies want.
Yeah, we're all addicted. I mean, we are addicted because we can't function without it. And so we kind of have let people are sort of in the oh well mode. You know, like this stuff is happening, but oh well, I have to, you know, do my Facebook post because my friends have to see all of this. We are not like willing to do the hard decisions. Well, let's come back to that because I do want to talk about alternatives for regular people. But also there are some alternatives being tossed around by people in Washington. And these actually are pretty good alternatives, I think. I know that you've already touched on this, Dan, that one of the free market objections to this is that you can't, it's a company privately owned, and we cannot let government be coming in to dictate what a private company is doing. But Senator Josh Hawley has a bill called Ending Support for Internet Censorship Act. Can you explain that and see and tell us what you think the merits of that are and the dangers?
Well, basically, there's 20 years ago, to boost the internet, there was a Communications Decency Act law, and buried in it, inserted at the last minute, are 26 words that allow these companies to both be protected against lawsuits. And then it gives them the ability to pick and choose what content they restrict on their platforms. Now, originally when that was created, that was seen as a good thing. They could get rid of child porn. They could get rid of pornography in general. They could get rid of things that, you know, snuff films or anything like that. And when that was all that they did, that was great. But now that they do speech, and particularly restrict speech based on a liberal world mindset, conservatives don't like it. So Hawley's idea is to, you know, force these companies to treat everybody equally or to lose that protection. The problem is that is really difficult, because then what speech do they restrict? What don't they allow? You could find conservatives who would say, well, we're okay with the most extreme speech being posted on your platform, political speech, you know, communist, Nazi, you know, whatever. And then you find conservatives who don't want that. They say, well, we want the company still to restrict that. And that's part of the problem. So the MRC heads up the Free Speech Alliance, this alliance of 56 different conservative organizations that were trying to get to speak with one voice and one of the platform planks very clearly is to try to get them to do what you were calling for just a minute ago. And that is to emulate and embrace the First Amendment, the ideals, not the law. We're not talking about, we're not changing the law to force these companies to act like they're the government, because that's what First Amendment protects you against government control, not private control. But it's still very clearly America is a free speech country. That's, we say it all the time. We talk about it all the time. We know that we believe that we have the right to say things. And these companies no longer believe that. So that's the goal. And Hawley's bill, so the question is, does Hawley's bill fix that problem or make it worse? And I think the jury's still out of that, especially because bills, get manipulated a lot in Congress. And then the president's also looking at an executive order about all this. And yes, I understand the libertarian fear or complaint that if you get government involved in mandating what's free speech, then you'll have government coming up with a hate speech policy. And for all that social media companies like Facebook, their hate speech policy is horrible. One the government comes up with will be worse. But, if you can't stand up to a company like Facebook, like Google, because they have too many lawyers and too many lobbyists and too much cash, then where do you turn? And that's why people are turning to government to try to solve the problem.
Yes, well, we have to say that Google has become a powerhouse. You know, as you well know, in Washington, at even Republican events or conventions, they have massive rooms. They're always wooing and spending money, and they have a great lobbying outfit. And they pulled in a lot of conservatives that have been well connected in the past. They're very smart about how they handle this, and so they have become very big.
But that said, when Facebook used to do that, this year Facebook didn't even go to CPAC and didn't sponsor it, but it sure went to Netroots, which is the Daily Kos liberal version.
That's amazing.
Of a big conference to bring in people from around the country.
Yeah.
And that shows that these tech companies are more and more withdrawing from the conservative movement.
Yeah, let me also add just so people will know, Dan, that American Family Association is part of that Free Speech Alliance. Happy to be part of that and work together. And now the Justice Department is also doing their diligence. I believe the issue there is whether these companies like Google have established a monopoly and are, doing unfair trade practices, as I understand it. Did I get that right?
Yeah, there's several, at this point, several government investigations, I think, of these social media companies. It looks like there might be more because there's investigations in this country, investigations abroad. It looks like EU is going to try to hit Facebook with billions of dollars of more fines. The day of playing fast and loose is over for these companies, and so they're trying to maximize and protect their position. Facebook, for example, owns the two top competitors to it, Instagram and WhatsApp.
That
tends to protect you long term.
Yeah. Well, in the few minutes that we have left, Dan, I have talked about this before, but I would love to know what you think. Alternatives. I'll just start by saying that I don't use Google anymore. I use DuckDuckGo, which I've been very pleased with. Some people think that DuckDuckGo is part of Google. I don't think so based on my reading. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, I at times use DuckDuckGo myself. I do tend to use Google more. Google remembers things that you search. This is good and bad. I mean, if you're afraid of Google pulling together a profile of you, Google has a very extensive profile of me. But since I Google for work, a lot of that is simply things that I've written about at work and has no relationship to my life. So it's so much information, it has no information, if you get my point.
Yeah.
But because of that, it's very useful to me. for Googling things for work. There's Gab. Gab is a free speech site, but because it's a free speech site, it allows pretty much any speech, and that offends a lot of people, particularly religious people. They go on there and they see a lot of over-the-top comments, four-letter words and things. And that's the fine line here we're trying to deal with, protecting speech and not offending people. I think ultimately the solution is that these companies have to come up with a version of, like the movie rating system, G, PG, R, NC-17, so that you can pick the experience you want, not them deciding who you get to. I mean, that's the essence of the problem. They want to decide who you get in your feed, and you should be able to decide who you get in your feed.
Right, and it's totally biased. Also, maybe, Dan, we need to have one that's regional. Let them have one for Europe. Let them censor the Europeans and let America have a free and open exchange of ideas with the First Amendment caveats of inciting violence or talking about killing someone or whatever the limitations are. Dan Gaynor, you're doing great work, and it's so nice to have so much of your time today. I really appreciate it. This has been a great help to me and to my listeners. Thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.